Good evening. It is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What Will I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. Kingston police have released a report covering Queen's Homecoming and Faux Homecoming 2024, reporting only a fraction of the charges seen in other years and no significant incidents. Each year, homecoming celebrations paint Queen's campus and the surrounding area the tricolor palette of blue, gold, and red, with alumni and current students alike joining in on the school spirit. An unofficial but expected portion of the event also includes a blowout party weekend for current students, entailing the infamous street party on Aberdeen and often a substantial number of fines being dealt out by police and bylaw. However, Kingston residents and visiting alumni may have noticed that both the official homecoming and faux homecoming weekends in October came and went with little commotion this year, especially when compared to the past few years since the pandemic. In 2021 and 2022, Kingston police reported, quote, hostile and aggressive crowds reaching over 7,000 people on Aberdeen. The reports from those first 2 years of the event's full return following the pandemic included injuries sustained from falling from rooftops and crowd surfing in shopping carts, projectiles being thrown into the crowd and at police, and climbing trees while intoxicated. In 2023, while there was a drop in numbers with an estimated 4,000 students on the street and, quote, more cooperation and respectful behavior, Kingston police still dealt with a substantial number of residential parties along with the street takeover. A total of 461 charges were dealt out by police and bylaw during homecoming last year. As for this year, Kingston police stated, quote, this homecoming weekend looked like what a homecoming weekend should. Only 122 charges were dealt out over the 2 weekends, a 74% decrease from 2023, and no serious incidents were reported, with only small house and backyard parties taking place throughout the student district. It was also noted that attendees were, quote, polite, cooperative, and respectful. While it has been routine for Kingston police to declare a nuisance party on Aberdeen and spend most of the day clearing the street, this year all streets remained open. Total costs for policing both homecoming and fake homecoming were $253,000, representing a 29% reduction from last year's total of $359,000. School spirit was still strong during both weekends in October, with a sold-out homecoming football game at Richardson Stadium and no shortage of jackets, frosh overalls, and blue, gold, and red. I sat down with Chief of Kingston Police, Scott Frazier, to discuss what was done differently this year.
There was quite a different tone this year, I believe, in comparison to the past few years since the event returned post-pandemic. I was wondering if you could speak a bit to some of the reasons for that.
Yeah, certainly. So I can tell you, of course, I'm newer to Kingston, coming here as deputy chief at late 2021 and working through as a deputy chief in 22 and then taking over as acting chief in 23. But what I can tell you is that over the past 2 years, we've taken a lot different approach to just the event happening and us showing up. And, what we've really done, we've taken a proactive approach. The students, it was kind of, historically, it was kind of, adversarial. It was the police versus the students, and really we wanted to change that. So what we did is we came out in 23 with our kind of more of a corporate communication strategy where we were liaising with the city of Kingston and with the university as well to get the messaging out, because we found by speaking with people, the messaging wasn't getting to the group that we wanted it to get to. So we've kind of, over the last year and a half, improved our messaging strategy. And then we also created in 23 a police liaison team. So the liaison team is they're trained officers who are trained in de-escalation, they're trained in communication, and they're trained to go out non-aggressive and not in uniform to go out and talk to people about here's what the expectations are, and here's what the consequences will be. So outlining that we're certainly here, we want people to be safe. That's what our goal is, safety. And there's laws, and we have to enforce those laws. And there's not a different law because it's a different event. The laws are the same, but we liaised this, and we liaised what our expectations were. We also incorporated using intelligence. You know, there's lots of open source data to tell us what events are taking place, when they're taking place, how many people may be attending. So we use that, and then we target those people to assist us in delivering the messaging of be safe, You know, don't be down there with alcohol. All of these things, all of the desired outcomes we want. And then collectively having a proactive presence strategy and really being present with our partners and engaging all of our partners. And our partners include, obviously, City Bylaw, who's an excellent resource for our community. You've got Queen's University itself. When we talk about homecoming and fake homecoming and St. Patrick's Day, we have all of our city partners, including KGH Hospital, Hotel Du. You know, we have the Downtown Business Improvement Association. You know, we have transit, all of these people. And we work collectively to provide the most unique opportunity for people and to be safe. So I think when you put that strategy together and the students realize that the police are not your enemy, we're not here, we're not trying to stop people from having fun, but what we are trying to do is prevent people from getting hurt, including officers. We're preventing people from overfilling our emergency rooms at our hospitals. And really, we just want them to have a good time, and we want to show them how they can do it and have a good time and do it safely. And I think we've really seen a turnaround in our police, our response to the students, and the students' response to us. And certainly I go down, I'm present at all these events, and I noticed it distinctly. St. Patrick's Day, homecoming, fake homecoming, it's where we want to go. And our whole goal, we want to reduce our footprint at these events, because if they're safe and they're fun and there's no need for police in mass response, we're going to reduce our costs there. So that's what we're trying to do, be cost efficient. This year we were able to, despite they had a fake homecoming and a homecoming, we reduced our cost by $106,000. So, you know, we're working towards that. Reduce our footprint, reduce our costs, and really, you know, let's have a safe and fun event and work with that. Work with everyone, including the community, which is the biggest partner of all, because, of course, that area is unique. It's in one side it can be a residence for the university, and the other side can be a home that someone's lived there for 50 years. So we just have to balance that institutional / education institution and a neighborhood, if that makes sense.
Thank you for diving right into what Kingston Police did this year. I was wondering if you could also speak a bit to what you were met with, you know, the circumstances with Aberdeen being closed, the first weekend being during your reading week, as well as just the attitude of the students this year.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, anytime if we start right in September, you know, we come out with our PLT team in September. We come out with enforcement teams in September. So we set the precedent, because every September a new batch of students come in. And we've only been doing this for 2 years, but we're already seeing the impact, because the students who 2 years ago, you know, obviously met this first PLT team and the first new kind of style of policing these events, they're now in their third year going into their fourth year. So, you know, by the time it's a four-year cycle where everyone in the university then will be versed in how they need to behave in order to generate the response they get from us. And really, you know, so in September when those new students come, a lot of them, it's their first time away from home and it's exciting. And who wouldn't be excited? Kingston's an amazing community. Like, who wouldn't want to be here and who wouldn't want to be out enjoying everything Kingston has to offer? It's awesome. So we're encouraging them to do that, but then we're also laying the rules. And when we lay that out in September, it makes it easier for us in when it comes to March for St. Patrick's Day. That makes it easier then for homecoming, because there's expectations and everyone knows what they are. So when we did that in September, you know, some people are upset because they got a ticket and stuff, but we saw a reduction this year in the number of tickets that were issued during that period of time. And we also observed a more collegial relationship, the police and the students or people who are attending. And that's exactly what we want. It's not adversarial. There are some times we have to, you know, perform our duty as expected by the community, but if we can be there, keep people safe, keep it as a celebratory event and not turn it into an aggressive event where people are throwing things and there's fights and all that, that's what we're trying to do. Keep it fun, keep people safe, and that's just how we'll continue on. So that's what we were met with. For the most part, we saw a great relationship, and we want to continue that moving forward.
Post-homecoming, did KP receive any feedback, whether that be from residents or student attendees?
Yep, certainly. And we certainly do a debriefing after all of these events with our community partners. And, you know, obviously you brought it up a little bit earlier, the road being closed, that, you know, that obviously caused a bit of a different situation, because usually that's the area where everybody congregates. So we saw it kind of spread over a larger area this year, just because that spot was not kind of accessible. So we saw that. We understand it's going to be a problem for probably the next few years. However, you know, at the end of the day, you know, in our debriefing, we saw, you know, a much increased, more positive relationship between police and students. We saw a reduction, I think, in, you know, the reduction in the emergency room visits, reduction in people getting hurt, reduction in enforcement. You know, if they're not committing an offense, there's nothing to enforce. And if you look at our 3 years of kind of the last 2.5, 3 years of strategy in regards to ticketing and enforcement and stuff like that, you see a very high number and it's slowly reducing. And that's the desired outcome we want. We want our people to be there and unable to find anything bad happening, because that means you're running a successful event. You know, and I akin it to, we have a major rock group or concert come into town. We have officers who are there, but people attend, they know what the rules are, they follow those rules, and there's no enforcement. And if there's something outside of what is deemed to be lawful, then we act. And if everything is lawful, we don't need to act. And so certainly that for us is our desired outcome, and we're starting to see that. And we understand that continuing it is a big effort on the police's part, but the benefit is to the community, so we're going to continue to do that.
Yeah, and how does KP plan to continue this trend in the future?
Yeah, so for us, obviously, I think we have a good recipe right now for success. So continuing the messaging, making sure the messaging is getting to the right people, obviously using our PLT teams to get on the ground and knock on doors and educate students and educate people who are attending. The media, obviously utilizing media messaging, continue to monitor open source intelligence and watch what's happening on and try and deal with it before it does. So watching specific social media sites and things like that. And then once again, involving the entire community early on for a collaborative approach. If we attack it from every angle, then you know what? Everybody's covered, everybody's safe, and that's it. Our 100% goal is safety. And when we can go through and say we've had an event and no one got hurt and the taxpayer can understand that we're spending our money wisely, then obviously it's a win-win for everybody.
Once again, that was Scott Fraser, Chief of Kingston Police, on this year's homecoming. Partners in Mission Food Bank is officially making the move to a new, larger space to accommodate for increased demand. Partners in Mission is currently located at 140 Hickson Avenue and has been there since 2003. However, as demand continues to rise in the Kingston community, with the organization helping over 8,000 Kingstonians in 2023, Partners in Mission now finds themselves in need for more space for storage, volunteers, and those seeking services. It has been announced that in 2025, Partners in Mission will be making the move just 25 meters away to 4 Harvey Street. I sat down with Dan Irwin, Executive Director of Partners in Mission Food Bank, to discuss the move. Partners in Mission is officially set to move to a new location. What challenges are you experiencing at your current location that made you decide this is a needed change?
Yeah, well, we're in our what's going to be our fourth year in a row with record numbers, and we've just maxed out at what we can do here. Unfortunately, we're so full that our clients are unable to come into the building, so they're waiting outside in all sorts of terrible weather, and that's just not something we're comfortable with. So our new space is going to enable our clients to come inside. It's a shopping model, so they'll be able to choose the food they want, so it's going to be a much better experience for them.
And the new location is just a few meters up the street. How much more space will this provide? What's the jump here?
Yeah, so we're going to double our space. Our total square footage in this building is just around 8,000, and the new building will be 17,500.
Were the funds for this move achieved through fundraising?
Yeah, so we've known that this building had limitations and that we were growing so fast. So we've been trying to put money away. So that's what we've been trying to working towards. We're also fundraising right now to help with the renovations. We're looking for $1 million for our renovations. We're at right around the $350,000 mark. So we're still got a ways to go to help us to get these renovations paid for.
And you will still be at your current location during the busy holiday season. What challenges does that present, and what's the plan for the next few months?
Yeah, so right now you're right. We're at busy season, so it's going to get very full in here. We've got some awesome volunteers, 130 of them, who are doing their best to squeeze in here and there, and we're going to do that. That's kind of what we do here. We play the Jenga game, and we manage to get everything stacked up safely, and we still help the clients that need it. We'll be here until we're expecting a move date sometime in March. We'll firm that up as we get closer. We're just going to tighten it up, and we'll make it do.
How can folks donate if they'd like to support the move?
If they want to help support us, they go to kingstonfoodbank.ca, and there's a donate button, and right there, they hit that donate button and make a donation to us. If I can also add, if anyone needs help, they should call us. We're in a busy time, so you need to call us as soon as possible, 613-544-4100, and that's Monday to Friday.
Once again, that was Executive Director Dan Irwin with Partners in Mission Food Bank, sitting down with CFRC to discuss the organization's move to a new and larger space in the spring. Partners in Mission is currently sitting just above the $250,000 mark on their way to fundraising $1 million for renovations. This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Hello, Queens. This is Isabella Garrido, your CFRC sports reporter, coming to you with the latest updates from the world of Gales athletics. Welcome to the CFRC Sports Desk, where we keep you up to speed on all the action. Let's dive into this weekend's highlights as we head into our winter break. We'll start on the ice, where the Queens Gales women's hockey team closed out the first half of their season with a thrilling 4-2 victory over the York Lions in Toronto. Despite a late arrival due to weather delays, the Gales wasted no time, jumping to an early lead and setting the tone with a dominant first period. Sophie Hudson opened the scoring over just a minute and contributed to two more goals before leaving late in the third with an injury. Final frame saw the Lions push back, but a clutch empty netter by Taya Leonard sealed the win. This team heads into the break with momentum, but are anticipating their return to action on January 10th, hosting York at the Memorial Center. Shifting gears to the hardwood, Queens men's basketball secured a nail-biting 70-69 win against the McMaster Marauders on Saturday. It was a game of streaks, with the Gales building an early lead before McMaster clawed back to even the score by the fourth quarter. In the end, strong performances from Ollie Engine, Lucas Silas, and AJ Cumming kept Queens on top. The Gales now sit at 9-1 on the season and second in the OUA East Division. Not to be outdone, the Queens women's basketball team swept their weekend road series, defeating McMaster 60-56. Key contributions came from Brooke Hussey off the bench with 16 points, Michaela McFarlane with 14, and Katrina Renan's double-double of 13 points and 12 rebounds. Gales finished their first half on an 8-game win streak and an 8-2 record, sitting third in the OUA East. On the volleyball court, Queens Women's Volleyball continued their dominant run, picking up their 7th straight set win of the season over the Toronto Varsity Blues. Mary Stewart and Hannah Ducheneau led the offense with 12 and 9 kills, respectively, while Claire Carter delivered 5 service aces, including a critical one to secure the second set. With an 11-1 record and 9-game win streak, the Gales head into the break ranked first in the OUA. That's your sports recap. This has been Isabella Garrido with your CFRC Sports Desk. Now back to Christina Laurie for your weather report.
Thank you, Isabella. Now for your CFRC weather report for this evening. Tonight, we're expecting cloudy skies with winds being 15 kilometers per hour. We have a low of -7 with wind chill that's going to feel like -12 overnight. On Tuesday, December 3rd, we're expecting a mix of sun and cloud during the day, with winds being 15 kilometers per hour. We have a high of -1, with wind chill that's going to feel like -9. We have a UV index of 1 or low. On Tuesday night, we'll have increasing cloudiness with flurries beginning overnight. We'll have a low of -8 and wind chill -7 in the evening and -13 overnight. Starting on Tuesday night, Kingston will also be on snow squall watch. Snow squalls are possible on Tuesday night and into Wednesday. Hazards to look out for during this time will include locally heavy snowfall with accumulations near 20 centimeters, peak snowfall rates of 2 to 5 centimeters per hour, and very poor visibility at times in heavy snow. Consider postponing non-essential travel until conditions improve. If you must travel, keep others informed of your schedule and destination and carry an emergency kit and mobile phone.
Public Safety Canada encourages everyone to make an emergency plan and get an emergency kit with drinking water, food, medicine, a first aid kit, and a flashlight. More information is available at getprepared.gc.ca. On Wednesday, December 4th, we'll have periods of snow with windy conditions and a high of zero. Wednesday night, periods of snow or rain with windy conditions and a low of minus two. That wraps up your quick weather report for this evening, and next up is your CFRC traffic report with Jesse Bell.
This is Jesse Bell with your traffic report for the week of December 2nd, 2024. We begin with a quick note from the Ministry of Transportation. Sir John A. MacDonald Boulevard westbound off-ramp will be closed from Monday, December 2nd at 8 p.m. to Tuesday, December 3rd at 6 a.m. to complete line painting on the off-ramp. Other road closures. Abbeydon Road, Highway 2 to Middle will be closed to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Albert Street, Princess to 486 Albert is closed until December 31st to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Collingwood Street, Earl to Union is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Cooper Street, Albert to Collingwood is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Hillcrest Avenue, Kings Court to 7th is closed for buried infrastructure replacement. Road will be open to local traffic, however. Kings Court Avenue, Hillcrest to Kirkpatrick is closed to accommodate a water main replacement. Union Street, Willingdon to Albert is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. And University Avenue, Union to Earl is closed for construction related to the Queen's J-Duck project. Here are some other delays to keep an eye on this week. Aberdeen Street, Johnson to Earl, expect delays and closures along Aberdeen for a contractor to complete road and sewer reconstruction. Bay Ridge Drive, Princess to Taylor Kidd, expect delays while a contractor begins Phase 2 of the Bay Ridge Drive active transportation upgrades. Collins Bay Road, Prince Charles to Edwin and Princess, expect delays while a contractor completes Phase 2 of the Princess and Collins Bay active transportation improvements. Gardner's Road at Centennial and Creekford, expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal updates, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Highway 2, Abbeydon to St. Lawrence. Expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Sir John A. MacDonald Boulevard at Elmwood. Expect delays while a contractor upgrades the intersection at Sir John A. MacDonald Boulevard and Elmwood Street, including replacement of street lighting, new traffic lights, replacement of asphalt on roadways, and a new multi-use pathway south of the intersection towards Bath Road. And that's a wrap for your City of Kingston traffic report for the week of Monday, December 2nd, 2024. This is Jesse Bell from CFRC 101.9 FM, and this is your weekly events calendar. On Monday, December 2nd, The Brass and One-Eyed Jacks will host their weekly trivia game starting at 7 and 7:45 p.m., respectively. On Tuesday, December 3rd, the Kingston Public Market is open from 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Springer Market Square. Also on Tuesdays from 4 to 5 p.m., there is a newcomer men's group hosted by Immigrant Services Kingston and Area, where newcomer men can meet other newcomers at 837 Princess Street. Daft Brewing is also hosting its Euchre Night starting at 7 p.m. On Wednesday, December 4th, Something in the Water Brewing and Daft Brewing will also host their trivia nights starting at 7 p.m., and One-Eyed Jacks will host its North End Board Games Night for free, also starting at 7 p.m. On Thursday, December 5th and Friday, December 6th, the Kingston Grand Theater will host the State Ballet Theater of Ukraine and The Nutcracker. The performance features a 50-dancer ballet troupe, a brand new set, and over 200 exclusive costumes created especially for this production. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. Tickets are available online via the Kingston Grand Theater website. On Thursdays, the Kingston Public Market is open from 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Springer Market Square. And of course, the Grad Club is running its free and hugely popular weekly trivia night every Thursday starting at 8 p.m. On Friday, December 6th, City Hall will be illuminated white and purple for the National Day of Remembrance and Action on Violence Against Women. White and purple ribbons are worn on this day to remember the 14 female engineering students who were murdered at L'École Polytechnique de Montréal on December 6, 1989, in an act of gender-based violence. It is also a day to reflect on all women whose lives have been harmed or lost to gender-based violence. Saturday, December 7th marks the beginning of Downtown Kingston's free trolley and carriage rides program. Experience the magic of Downtown Kingston in winter. Pickup and drop-off is at Springer Market Square. And finally, on Sunday, December 8th, the Memorial Center Farmers Market will take place from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., featuring food, artisanal crafts, and music. Have a concert or event you would like to add to our online and on-air concert and events calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca, and don't forget to follow CFRC on Instagram at cfrcmusic.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear, 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.